Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted podcast host. I'm here with James Ernst of Core Order, an interesting little AI model. I'm excited to get into this one, but I want to know, I mean, there's nobody who's like, you know, been doing AI work like we have available now more than, you know, 5, 10, 15 years in the past. So I'm guessing you didn't start learning machine learning coding in 2000 and have been working it all this time. So give us a taste of your villain origin story, a little bit of background, and let us know what you're all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started my career about 18 years ago doing marketing and public relations. So I've been working typically at agencies all throughout the country. Also spent a brief 3-year stint running my own restaurant in Buffalo, New York. So that was a fun dive into entrepreneurism. But I really got into AI probably about 4 years ago, just kind of with theoretical things. I was working at a white labeled web development company, and really started just seeing what was out there and what we could do with it, especially with image generation. I have a lot of my nerdy hobbies like Dungeons and Dragons. So that's kind of what guided me into start playing around with some of the tools. And then have kind of just pigeonholed myself into learning as much as I could and have been working actively in the AI space for the last 2 years, you know, full time in AI work.
It's become a full time job just keeping up with the changes, because I also, you know, I was on the early beta of Midjourney and remember when it looked like an idiot swirling paint on a canvas, like, that's a dragon. Yeah.
Yep.
Yes, if you squint, but exactly. I think it's back to that, what was it? Will Smith eating spaghetti on a roof.
Yep. Yeah, like that's become the benchmark now for everything. Like I just saw an article yesterday of somebody with the latest models going out and regenerating Will Smith eating spaghetti. And I love that that is now our cultural reference point to see how much better video generation could be based on that one silly thing from a few years ago.
So plugging A into B, you know, taking some of the digital marketing stack, especially with your experience in PR, I'm interested, what is the framework that you're adopting with Core Order? What's unique about it and why build it?
Yeah, so Core Order, the language that we use is Core Order is a growth architecture firm. The one thing that we have seen is AI is becoming just this like plug and play with everything. There are so many tools popping up that, you know, people want to just sell you and get embedded in your business. And the one thing that we have seen over the years of working in any of these professional services industries is different departments and companies, different organizations just keep buying tools, investing in them. A few people use them, but your data is skewed everywhere. And we know that AI is most powerful when it can leverage data. So the whole premise of Core Order is looking at what your business is doing and asking yourself, you know, the first question you should be asking yourself is not which tool should we buy, but what are we trying to make structurally better? And then figuring out a custom solution, leveraging AI or automation to embed that and get everybody in the organization in alignment. So that's kind of really the approach that we're taking of working with small to medium-sized businesses of how can they tackle these pain points and these problems and come up with a solution that's really going to benefit them long-term and not just be another investment in a tool that sits unused for 6 months and somebody forgets they signed up for a subscription.
I definitely feel that. Ironically, I actually created a Google Claude script to go and analyze my personal finances and find all of my SaaS subscriptions for me to evaluate, have you done anything with this? Mm-hmm. That's definitely an embarrassing thing, but I think it's part of the modern, you know, small business owner dilemma of, you know, there's all these tools, you want to, you know, get the most bang for your buck, but they're also, you know, there's always aggrandizement, shall we say, of like, what's the aspiration of what said tool can actually do for your organization versus your appetite to fully integrate it, the ability of your team to comprehend and fully utilize it. And then, you know, it really comes down to, you know, it's almost that you're right. There needs to be that consultation space. But I do have to ask, is it with SaaS, how much of, you know, the sandbox nature of Cloud Code or, Cloud Desktop or what have you, or MCPs that makes, you know, is it better to find different stacks of SaaS tools with different tooling or come up with some homebrew stuff that's going to fit the need? Like, where's your mentality on that?
I think there's a perfect balance between the two, honestly. You know, I'm homebrewing tons of stuff. I have my own AI Jarvis that runs my entire life right now outside of work. And I'm always trying to just push and see what we could come up with. In terms of, you know, business and organizational stuff, there's a lot of opportunity there to homebrew, build something out and deploy it, especially if you have somebody internally that is, you know, passionate about that, can help figure out the security concerns that come with it. But I mean, we've all heard the horror stories of somebody letting a rogue OpenClaw agent just wipe out a ton of data in a company because they don't know what they're doing and they're following a YouTube tutorial. So I think there's, you know, ways of how do we look at something that you've already invested in a company, like maybe a CRM that has an MCP server, or we can leverage within, you know, API access and pull that data into a custom homebrew solution. So your data stays secure, but now you're leveraging it with the power of what you can actually do with AI, compared to maybe just building out something completely custom and hosting it in a secure way that's locked down to your organization. I think finding that right flow between the two is ultimately where we're going to end up. There's going to be some great tools out there that have millions and billions of dollars invested into them that you're just not going to beat with a homebrew solution. But for a smaller company, maybe something custom built that is serving its purpose on a specific workload that speeds up your team and allows you, your human team to actually focus on what they do best, might be the best solution.
I agree. And I think part of it is, you know, data mining within your own organization. My friend Matt Brooks of SEO Terex says, you know, it's training your own external customer support team, you know, Claude, ChatGPT, Perplexity. They're answering questions about you and they're going to do a very bad job unless you take the time to try to put out the information at where they could find it, where they're going to trust it, so that when the question does come up, it's saying the right thing. You know, like there was a launch of a data center energy solution in Texas, and we planned out and mapped, oh, hey, this is, you know, what is important to the organization is said about it. And then I went back and I cross-referenced everything that had been pushed out on PR. There were like 30 articles that had been written, but then I cross-referenced that with what we actually said on the site and pointed out the discrepancy of like, okay, is what everything everybody has been told to say, or these reporters have picked up or taken up from interviews, is this aligned with what we actually intended? And if it is, we should add this content to the site. If it isn't, then we should try to do a correction in the PR material. Or, you know, like we need to take control of this narrative aspect of it, but, you know, it's thinking through, you know, the way that we're presenting the data about the company that really, you know, it's as much alignment between the messaging as it is, you know, anything technical to worry about.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when it comes to, you know, putting information out there for these companies, for AI to read and digest, is that part of your scope and mission, or is your scope and mission more internal in terms of workflow, agentic optimization mm-hmm. for these companies?
Yeah, right now our primary scope of mission is definitely on the internal. How do you leverage data to make that internal workflow better? And how do you find those time-saving measures to leverage things that you have to repeatedly do every single day? We're not too focused on looking at how messaging is being pulled into large language models and coming up on Perplexity or, you know, Comet or any of the AI search engines right now. But that is definitely something that I know we will be walking into as it becomes more prevalent. But our main focus really is how do you leverage that data internally to improve those workflows?
So what are some of the concerns you hear about people when it comes to, you know, leveraging AI for internal tooling for systems, for processes, for ops? Mm-hmm.
I think the two biggest that I'm always hearing and have been talking about for a while that are big on my radar are the security of it, as well as the ability for AI to hallucinate. So how do you make sure that it's just not going to go out and start making up data points, start, you know, filling in gaps that it doesn't know, as well as how do we know if we give it access to data, it's not going to do something malicious with that data. And I think those are probably going to be the two biggest questions any company is asking, especially when you're thinking about internal tooling with AI.
Is comms like an area where, you know, because I've heard people, you know, tapping, getting APIs and giving it to Claude has given them wins. I think it was Backyard Resort Pools, like, you know, they were looking at, you know, changing the way that they handle comms internally. Is that the biggest win, or is it in a different domain internally?
I think where I've seen the biggest win is more on leveraging and understanding the data that's there. So, you know, whether that is finding a task that, you know, takes a company a good 4 hours a week per, you know, 10 employees and finding a way to bring that down to 30 minutes by leveraging that time and allowing them to focus on what's actually going to move the needle for the company. Being able to keep everybody on that same messaging point. That's a lot of work that we've been seeing, as well as, you know, all these companies have mission statements, brand guidelines. And once people go out there and start talking about it, are they sticking to those same points? But making sure your AI that you're using internally can help guide those conversations and keep everybody on that same messaging in terms of comms. I think some of the areas that I've seen the most success and ROI from initial engagements that we've had.
Is your financial data secure when you're using AI for small businesses?
From what I have personally allowed it to have access to, obviously anything financial, you want to make sure that you have precautions set up. You're giving it a controlled environment and you're trusting the data that's fed. We do a lot of that with feeding it only into a specific database that we have completely locked down to be able to run like mathematical computations and things like that. But anything with AI, you want to make sure that you're taking that security absolutely seriously, because as we know, AI is still an ever evolving. And especially if you're using one of those open, you know, foundational models like Claude or OpenAI, you want to make sure that what you're giving it is also locked down to your system. So that's one thing that we're having conversations with a lot of clients, is making sure that they are set up on their enterprise or business accounts that the AI models aren't being trained. Or, you know, we've been talking to a lot of people about leveraging open source, locally hosted models to really make sure things are locked down. So there's definitely a spectrum there. And I always say with AI, err on the side of caution before just giving it open access to everything.
Can you surface any examples? I know you probably have NDAs to navigate around, but if you can white label some of the solutions that you've come up with and say, hey, this is a concrete thing for this particular niche or for this particular vertical that had this particular outcome, what would that white paper look like?
Yeah, so actually one of my favorite ones to talk about is for an agency partner of ours, we created a solution that allowed them to go off and figure out to automate research of a prospect. So this tool would go out and you would take just basic information like, you know, domain, contact name, anything you could feed it that would start the agent's swarm that we essentially created to go off and do research. So it would go and look at the website, create markdown files, go run, leverage different AI tools like Tavily to go off and find related PR pieces that had official backlinks back to the site so it knew it was a trusted source, and then essentially automate and come up with a company profile as well as recommend, you know, what type of services would be beneficial to have an opening sales conversation. We're still collecting the data on exactly how that has turned out to an ROI. But what we have seen and from the initial feedback is it gives the sales team a much stronger talking point to go in, as well as it's something that they can actually show that prospect of, this is something we're able to do with AI. And this is how we're able to leverage it and understand your business better just from leveraging these tools.
Love it. As a entrepreneur, somebody who opened a restaurant, what's your take right now, your hot take for entrepreneurship in the age of AI capability?
What I warn all of my friends and colleagues that are in the small business, running their own business, my wife owns three herself right now, and AI could either be a superpower or a distraction. So as we talked about, like, there's so much to keep up with that, what's up there, you know, especially if you get nerdy about this stuff like I do, keeping up with every model release, keeping up with every new workflow, every new tool that's out there could be overwhelming. And as a small business owner or as an entrepreneur, you have so much on your plate that you're juggling at any time that adding that extra thing to try to figure out could be a pursuit of saving time, but it could also distract you from running your business. But at the same time, missing out on finding the right workflow, the right automation, the right agent that you can empower to free up your time so you can actually focus on the reason why you got into business in the first place, and let an agent, you know, do something just like you would hire an expert to, you know, be your CFO or your chief operating officer, because we all have strengths and weaknesses in your entrepreneurial spirit, and finding a way to leverage that with, you know, your people that work for your organization or now agents that work for your organization, and finding that balance, I think, is the one of the biggest things to keep an eye out for.
Is regulation in businesses something that you have to train your AI models to understand the limits on what can and can't be done? Because that, you know, I do consulting for, you know, Pure Air, and, you know, they can only say certain things about their oxygen monitoring system. They can't say other things. And then on the back end, on ops, you know, when they're selling stuff, you know, there's obviously, you know, rules and guidelines. So is there like a recommended process where you, you know, keep that, you know, have a discovery session with the client of like, hey, what can we say and not say, or what are the red lines that we can or need to be aware of to put into these systems?
Absolutely. So that's one of the things that, especially at Core Order, that we have made a major point of every one of our engagements. the whole thing is like you could go out and use AI, and what we'll see typically is, you know, somebody just getting a Claude account, setting up and working on it, and it's going to pull from that. But as you said, you have to be very specific, especially like if you're working in a healthcare space with HIPAA, you know, you any of these regulated industries, you have to make sure that it is absolutely accurate and not going off the rails or not hallucinating. So what I always recommend and what we do at Core Order is a really in-depth discovery session that kicks off everything that we do. And then we have our six domains that we come up with for every client that then helps feed the true AI system that we are working and deploying with them later on. But that's going to keep everything guided and directed. And any of those things that is in the minds of the people that are running the businesses, any of those regulatory language things are being fed and put into those systems so that we could control the outputs that come out. And they, you know, through Claude MD files or instruction MD files, we're really limiting where the hallucinations could go off and creating agent systems to always go back and check in on making sure that any artifacts that are produced or any workflows are not coming up with things that aren't a part of that approved language.
I'm curious, what are some of the verticals that you guys have played around in? What types of businesses have you been working with? And what industries do you think are really primed for making the most out of what you can offer?
Yeah, so we're industry agnostic. We've worked with a lot of manufacturing companies. We've worked with lots of professional services firms. You know, we've seen interest in some financial services firms and medical industry as well, some med tech. And I really think that from the conversations that we've had, there are pain points in every industry. So I think that's where AI is kind of cutting through those industry guidelines of there's always a pain point that's there. You can see the frustration on a workflow that takes a company a long time to get through. So I think that a lot of these industries are primed, and I think it's more on you can see success if you have an understanding of your data or you're leveraging a system where data is stored. It doesn't have to be perfectly stored. That's the beauty of AI. We can parse it and look through it and help guide that experience. But I think as long as you are aware of where your pain points are, what you want to accomplish with it, and have that understanding of we want to solve X, Y, and Z and not just implement AI, that is what's going to help a company actually implement this and stick with it.
I've wondered about the concept of empathy when it comes to you know, successfully putting out your messaging. And that's understanding, you know, pain points. What are the pain points that you're identifying in your potential customers that seems to resonate when you're approaching them with your skills to remediate said pain points?
Yeah. I think the pain point that resonates most is a lack of time, especially with AI and just the rate of speed that, you know, the American economy pushes people to grind constantly. People feel the need to constantly perform. They feel like they're behind because AI can now produce so much more. You know, we're creating much more than we ever have before, but it doesn't feel like enough because with AI, we could do more. And I think that that is the one thing that rings true between every conversation I've had is how do you free up that time element to focus on what actually matters? So I know there's a lot of people that have conversations of how do we reduce workforce, things like that. And that's never the approach that we take with it. It is how do we make your workforce, your humans that actually keep your business alive and thriving, and give them back the time to really do what they enjoy most, whether that is a financial analyst who's digging into the numbers or a recruiter that's helping somebody find a job and helping them weed through, you know, resumes to make sure their resume is actually going to get through an AI system and really keep that human element, the human in the loop, as a part of this.
With the coming robot insurrection, do you think they'll be kind to you?
You know, I have been personally saying please and thank you to my AIs since day one. So, you know, I'm hoping I'm on the good list there, but you never know. But yeah, you know, I treat it as a coworker, somebody that I can brainstorm with. As I've been using AI, you know, for years now, it has been something that has become second nature. And I think it's going to be interesting to see where it actually pans out over the next few years.
Curious if you've had any inflection moments where you've spoken to someone and truly realized the gap and just how adopted and tuned in you are to the cutting edge of this stuff versus, you know, they have no idea.
Yeah, this is something I think about a lot. And one thing I was actually reflecting on, because it's, then this is in my own family. So my wife is very tech savvy. As I said, she runs three businesses. And, you know, she uses AI for various things to help with her workflows and keep things organized. But as I talk and even just, you know, show her what I'm doing, you know, for with my fun projects, I could see that she is now where I was on AI 3 years ago, just working in like the chat interface and getting there. And now like I'm dealing with agents. So it's, and yeah, I have these moments of, you know, that imposter syndrome. And I think that's not something I thought about since early on in my career. And the amount that like I could do now, and it's because AI can help me accomplish that. You know, I never became an official machine learning expert. I'm self-taught as a developer. But I have been around this and learning it, and I could write my own code. And yes, I leverage like Claude Code a ton and Codex. But it's, you know, you have these moments of like, can I do that because of the AI, or can I do that myself? And I think having those moments of reflecting, of talking to other people, and AI is something I'm talking to a ton of people about now, of seeing where they are and, you know, whether they're 5 years ago where I was on a journey, or 3 years ago, or even last year, and kind of constantly reading and keeping up to date with what's out there, being able to, you know, have that understanding that, you know, because of probably my nerdiness of wanting to understand this, that like I have a deeper knowledge than a lot of people that I interact with. And it makes me excited to share that because, you know, AI can be scary. And I think there's a lot that we need to take caution with it. But Pandora's box has been open, and now we have to learn how to navigate within it. And that's my whole mission of figuring out how to use it as a tool that can help you be better at what you do, and knowing when to keep that human thought in there. Like, I do a lot of writing. I don't leverage AI to write anything for me, because that is something that is such a part of the human process that I want to keep that. And I think finding that balance of how do we leverage that humanity with the new AI overlords is going to be a fun one.
It does strike me, and I keep coming back to this theme of the more that AI comes out and the more slop that gets produced, the higher the value that comes back to human endeavors, the mm-hmm. human voice, you know, paintings painted by people, books written by people, which is funny because in a way it's almost redemptive, because we got so used to the penetration in our culture of, you know, Windows and computers, and we didn't really object so much. But if you step back and look at it, you know, there's so many things that these programs were doing or saying that could be used, you know, like Photoshop, you know, like before, you know, the 2000s, a photo was a photo. A photo was proof. There's nothing that could be altered about it. And then you know, I remember in high school, oh, that's Photoshopped. So there's kind of like this trust nature to it, but it occurs to me that there's a bigger valuation to, you know, that human signature on things.
Yep. For sure. I mean, I think, you know, we're going to see it more. We're going to see AI advertisements becoming more commonplace. I remember during football season last year, watching local ads that are clearly made completely out of AI and, you know, spotting it right away. And I think that this AI has the potential to be the great equalizer. It's going to allow people to accomplish things that they weren't able to before. But I think we're going to see that human piece of it really shine through and find an appreciation for human creativity, human thought, and just human empathy by having these tools be more prominent in our day-to-day life.
Well, go ahead and give a shout out for your company's site if you're on any particular socials or have any resources for companies to check out, small business owners who listen to this particular podcast. Let them know where you're at, if they can interact with you, and what you have on offer.
Yeah, absolutely. You can check us out at coreorder.ai. We have a small blog on there. We put a lot of thought pieces up and we'll be producing a lot more in the coming months. Also, I'm highly active on LinkedIn, so feel free to connect with me on there. It's, James Ernst, and I'm always happy to chat and dive into a conversation about AI with anyone.
Well, I appreciate your time and your commitment to Sparkle Motion, keeping businesses in line with the opportunity of AI while not losing their soul.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I truly appreciated it.
Adios.
See ya.